Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is Teresa Mishler, and we're going to be talking about Buddha and Einstein walk into a bar. And no, it's not a joke. It's the title of the book that was written by her husband, Guy Joseph Al. And the topics included are how new discoveries about mind, body, and energy can help increase your longevity. Buddha and Einstein Walk Into a Bar presents the revolutionary idea that sensing how long we can live is a latent capacity in us, currently unknown, just like the introduction of fire, the invention of flying, and the discovery of radio waves was before we, quote, discovered them. And understand the knowledge of transcendence, consciousness, and self-healing are integral to your well-being. For more information, you can visit the website, which is www.lifespanseminar.com, and I do have a direct link to that website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Teresa to the show. Good day, Teresa.
Hi, Robert. Thank you so much for having me. It's good to be on.
It is. Thank you. It's my pleasure, and I'm really happy to be able to talk about the book Buddha and Einstein Walk Into a Bar. Before we begin, this book was written by your husband, Guy Joseph Al, and if you wouldn't mind sharing just a little bit about the book and how it is to this point where I'm talking to you about the book.
Yes. This book is 32 years in the making. Guy started working on it about 32 years ago, and in that time he went through many different manuscripts, and also life experiences happened, and so it evolved into what it is today. And as you said in the introduction, the premise of the book is that we have a latent capacity in us to sense how long we can live. And then it goes through two different sections to understand how we have this potential and how it improves our lives. It starts with personal background, or Guy's personal background, his upbringing, his experiences, and how he came across this insight, and how his upbringing brought him to this realization. And then it talks about scientific and spiritual foundation that explain this ability. But then it turns the tables and shows how we can realize our potential lifespan through body consciousness techniques and self-management skills. And lastly, it dives into practical applications such as mental imagery tools and changing bad habits to good ones. And the premise is that only when we apply a new knowledge to our everyday life can we truly improve it.
Yeah.
So that is what the book is about.
Yeah. Yeah. That was what, you know, that was the application aspect to the book. You know, the part four, the everyday applications, to me is one of the most valuable parts of the book, because he does present some, you know, especially in the scientific and the spiritual foundations part, some, you know, just interesting discoveries. And it's like, wow, now that I know that, what do I do with it? And
absolutely.
You know, that's, yeah, very much so. So now I understand that this book was completely ready to go, and then Guy passed before it was published?
That's correct. It was ready to go, and he passed away on April 30th of this year from a very rare form of lymphoma. And it was very sudden, and it was most likely genetic. Doctors still didn't know the cause. And the silver lining in all of this is that he completed this book last year, and it was published in June. So it was published after he passed, which means that even though he thought that he would live till he was 102 years old, which I'm sure that we'll get into that a little bit more when we talk about the book, but he thought he was certain that he was going to live 102 years old, and that didn't happen. And he ended up passing prematurely. But this book was his legacy. And because of that, he's going to continue to help people posthumously, which is beautiful. And at the same time, it also touches on one thing that he mentions in the book, is that our potential duration is just that. It's a potential. It's the amount of years that we can live on this earth. Granted, bad things don't happen. And sometimes bad things happen. We get a rare disease, we get hit by a bus, or something else. And they're beyond our control. But he also mentions that it's the quality, not the quantity of life that matters. And his life was an example of living a quality of life. He did not waste one moment while he was here.
Wow. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, you know, it's, you know, especially when I read, you know, in the book about his belief that he would live to be 102, or, you know, that when that kind of popped into his head, and then he had, you know, pondered it, and, you know, I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, we don't know exactly, you know, what's the length, the longevity of our life will be, and it is really important to maximize the time that we have. But in this book, he really lays out a framework of, like you said, maximizing that time that we have, you know, and the quality of that time that we have. And one of the things I'd like to dive in a little bit into the personal background, because I think when reading that, it seems that some of those experiences really were critical in his drive to look at longevity. Like, so first of all, let's start with the acronym BADLM, which is the beginning, the first chapter, which is an acronym for Buddha, Alexander the Great, Darwin, Lincoln, Einstein, and Mandela. So would you share with the listeners a little bit about that? Because I think that would give them a real insight into the different facets of Guy.
Yes, absolutely. BADLM was very important to him because these were six different spirits in his life. They were all people who have already passed on. And they were spirits in his life that spoke to him and guided him throughout his life. And each one of them represented something different and spoke to him at different times when he needed it, which is what he mentions in the chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And Buddha spoke of self-knowledge, understand yourself and trust yourself. And Buddha was an elder statesman of the six. And then Alexander the Great communicated a few things mainly you live only this once, but also do what others are unable or unwilling to do. So Alexander pushed him. Darwin stressed the intellectual grasp of this awareness to sense how long he can live, and then really showed him how to explain it to others. Lincoln always asked, how does it benefit others? Always focusing on his audience. And Einstein, who was his hero, focused on imagination. He said that anything that is based in reason and facts is possible. And Mandela stressed pragmatism and responsibility for what this awareness of understanding how long he can live, what it meant to his own life, but then seeing it in a broader aspect, understanding, mm-hmm. How it would affect his entire life. And I'll go back to Einstein because Guy really, his attitude in life was very similar to Einstein's philosophy that you can't do anything without imagination, that anything is possible. And he really resonated with that, and that's really how he went through life, to understanding that there is an intellectual aspect, but imagination is so important as well.
Yeah, it is, I mean, we wouldn't have a fraction of the discoveries or advances that we experience now as maybe everyday, things that we take for granted without imagination, without, getting outside whatever convention, tends to lead us to believe. And it's just critical. And it's one thing, too, that I think in today's society that is outside of movies, that kind of thing where, imagination is kind of real strong. But, I mean, it just in everyday life, we really don't give imagination its due. I don't think. I mean, I think,
We really don't.
We just focus on the logic and the, quote, reality.
Yes, it's true. And it's not always taken seriously. If somebody comes up with a new idea. But that is why the ones who come up with new ideas in this world, they're considered the outliers or the people who think outside the box.
Uh-huh. I know. Yep. I mean, I know. And until it's, there's an application that can be applied to that, sometimes it just doesn't seem to have the intrinsic value that it should. I can understand where Einstein would have been really key for him. Now, in the formative years, there's a couple things that again I think maybe created or contributed heavily to Guy's quest or interest in longevity. And the first one was, the being foreign born in Georgia, like Russia, Georgia, and then
yes.
And then the near-death experiences. So would you mind sharing just a little bit? Because, I mean, the foreign-born and being in the U.S. as an illegal alien for, I think it was 7 years, he said, that, I mean, that's relevant right now. I mean, that's right there in front of us on a couple levels. So can you talk a little bit about, his view of that and how that contributed, to his, just who he was?
Oh, yes. He was, as you mentioned, he was born in Georgia, the country of Georgia, former Soviet Union. And he was there until 4 years old and then very briefly lived in Uzbekistan until he was eight. And then his family moved back to Georgia. And then when he was 12, his family moved to Israel. And he was in Israel until the age of 26, which is when he decided to move to the U.S. And what he says contributed to his philosophy of life from just having that upbringing is it ingrained in him this awareness that there's no one quote-unquote correct way of doing things. He really believed that regardless of where people live in the world, they go about their lives in different ways. And all of these ways work. And in the book, he says that this realization, it gives our psyche a sense of flexibility and limitless possibilities and the license to think outside of boundaries. So it was very important in him just learning how to give himself any self-imposed boundaries, but to just really fly and follow his heart. And what I love what he says is that he was born into a Jewish family. He lived in a Muslim country as a child. And then he said, I've lived in predominantly Christian societies as an adult. So he never felt part of any one religion, but he always felt at one God. Mm-hmm. And that really sums up his upbringing. And then when he moved to the U.S. for about 7 years, he was an illegal alien. I don't really like to use that term. An immigrant. Uh-huh. He was an immigrant. He was
right.
He was illegal, and for 7 whole years. And he had to be very careful not to break any laws or do anything mm-hmm. where he would be deported because it was his dream to be here. But then he became a citizen in 1996, and that is when he was able to live to his full potential. He didn't have any limits on him. And that is when he really took off. And for many years, he was an actor, as he mentions in the book. But then he decided in 2001 to start Lifespan Seminar and start the company that ended up helping so many people. And he's an example of somebody who moved here and ended up helping so many people just simply by moving to this country.
Yeah, you know, and that was, I really wanted, you know, to bring that up because, again, in today's environment, there's just so much acrimony, you know, toward immigration and immigrants here in the U.S. And, you know, the contributions that they make to society and you know, to all of the Americans whose lives they touch is really, to me, we should be looking at that bigger picture, how they contribute to the quality of life and, you know, how we can also, I mean, if we're able to bring them out of the shadows, you know, like, you know, Guy was able to, I mean, then not only do we have, you know, wonderful resources, but we also, you know, enable people to be their best, you know, to reach their potential or, you know, or to at least have the freedom to reach their potential. And, you know, it's just one of those things when, you know, when I read that in the book, it's like, you know, we really need to, this, you know, this kind of thing needs to be highlighted. Now also in that particular formative year section, he talks about near-death experiences. So those, particularly with my audience, they'd be really interested in knowing, you know, about those examples. And again, you know, I think when people have near-death experiences, perspective shifts, you know, and so I would think that that may have also contributed to his interest in longevity.
Oh yes, it definitely did. His first near-death experience was when he was 17. He was nearly killed in a motorcycle accident. He was hit by a car or was knocked off his bike from a speeding car, and he was lying on his back, and it obviously wasn't a very hard impact. He just caused him to just fall off his bike. But he's lying on his back in the middle of the four-lane highway, and just by turning his body at just the right time, he was nearly run over. And so that was his first near-death experience. And the second near-death experience was in 2007, when he had back surgery. And he had to have back surgery because a disc fragment in his lower back broke off the edge of a vertebra and lodged itself in the nerve canal. He had so much pain that he couldn't walk, stand, sit, or even move his body while he was lying. And he said for the first time he knew what it meant to be incapacitated, and that nearly killed him. And he went through back surgery, and it took a few years for his body to fully recover. He was able to go back to work, but it was a long recovery. And those were his two near-death experiences, which he says really pushed him to focus on just really understanding his life and the larger perspective of his life and really what it meant to be alive.
Yeah, you know, and it's one of those, again, it's one of those things where when people experience that, that you know, that's happened. And as a matter of fact, we've got a gentleman in the chat room. I'm sure he won't mind me sharing. His name is Bob. He's from the Whit Easter Islands off Australia. But he said that he faced his own death about a dozen times, more lives than a cat, and that's probably why he's grateful for every moment of his existence. But that's that gratitude and the awareness, you know, of life, I think is heightened when you have that experience. So, I mean, I personally would think that it would be wonderful if everybody didn't have to go through the experience, but had the end result of gratitude. You know, I think that we would be great. Oh, and it was the Whit Sunday Islands. Thanks, Bob. But, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, I'm sure, you know, again, you know, with Guy, you know, that you know, that was a basis, you know, of study, or, I mean, you know, of curiosity, at least, for him.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And you're right. Having these experiences caused him to not take any day for granted, to realize that life is precious, and he didn't waste one day of his life.
Yeah. So now that was kind of the personal background in the book, which was part one. And then there's, of course, the Inception of Insights, but the readers can get the book and read about that. But part two, is the scientific and spiritual foundations. So can you tell us a little bit, I mean, because in the scientific area, I mean, he really delves into, you know, several different areas of thought when it comes to life expectancy and just kind of how the, you know, the universe works in a way. So can you share with us maybe just his view of science and how that, you know, plays into, you know, the ability for us to improve our quality of life as well as possibly length of life?
Yes. The scientific spiritual foundations, they start with new cosmology and super string theory. New cosmology touches on that humankind, us as human beings, as far as we know, and based on research, we're the furthest advanced life form to evolve from the Big Bang. So the human brain is the most complex computational machine currently known to exist in the universe. And our mind is the primary known conveyor of consciousness in the cosmos. In layman's terms, that means that the universe is not separate from us. We are connected to the universe. And we were thought of before we were born, regardless of what spirituality or religion that somebody might believe, because we're connected to the universe, we were truly thought of before we were born. And each one of us, we carry in our genes the entire information of existence. So understanding how long we can live, that's the next step in our future progress or our evolution.
Mm-hmm.
And then what he says after that is he talks about the different scientific foundations. With new cosmology is a spiritual foundation. But the scientific foundations to understand how this ability to sense how long we can live, how it works, and how it can enhance our life. And those are super string theory, neuroplasticity, and epigenetics. And super string theory, to sum it up in one sentence, it's a framework that's been developing for the past 30 years that aims to understand the fundamental structure of the universe. And it says that we, as the observer, we create the subjective reality we're observing. So at the end of the day, our reality happens by the choices we make in our daily lives.
Mm-hmm.
So it touches a lot on personal responsibility, that our reality doesn't just happen to us, but our observation, it creates our reality. And then
right.
Neuroplasticity.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I was gonna say, and you know, in that one, you know, it's real important, you know, to recognize that, I mean, when it comes back to the idea of creating our own reality, and it's the active participation through our decisions and our actions that create that subjective
yes.
experience. Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And what neuroplasticity talks about is it takes the old notion that humans, they stop learning once at the end of childhood. In other words, their brain stops growing right at the end of childhood. And then after that, whatever they were taught at childhood is what they believe. And it's very hard to change people's opinions or their attitude towards life. It takes that and throws it on its head and says, according to recent research, the brain is actually constantly changing, and it's able to adapt to changing circumstances throughout our entire life, way past our childhood. So our brain is flexible and changeable, So it says that we have the ability to acquire different skills, memorize new information, and adapt through experience. But most importantly, we can change our life. We are not stuck in, you know, what happened or what we were taught in our childhood.
Mm-hmm.
We can change our brains by changing our habits. And
yeah.
So what that has
say,
to
you know,
do...
I'm sorry. What I was going to say was, you know, with that one too, you know, it's, I have a friend who's like 84 years old, and often when it comes time for her to learn something new or to do something different, change a habit, she always comes back, we can't teach a new dog, I'm an old dog, new tricks. I just laugh. I said, well, actually you can.
Yes, you can.
old dog there. So, but you know, but again, see that, you know, that really, when people recognize that they're not stuck they don't have to be stuck in old patterns or old, having old experiences, you know, guide them or run their life, you know, that, you know, there is an ability to change that wiring in the brain, you know, to maybe have a different response to, you know, a certain circumstance, you know, and, you know,
exactly.
Number one, it's like it can free them. It can free you. But the important part of that is, and I think you mentioned it earlier, is taking responsibility for doing that.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. And yeah. I'll touch on the last one, and then I'll explain, you know, what this has to do with sensing how long we can live. Epigenetics.
Okay. I was just going to say, what we're going to do in a few minutes, we're going to take a break. So I do want to invite listeners
that
if you'd like to call in, they can call in at 619-789-4359. And listeners in the chat room, if you have any questions, feel free to type them in. And so let's go ahead and, let's talk about epigenetics. And then after the break, we'll talk about how these all fit into that longevity picture.
Okay. Epigenetics, it's an emerging scientific field. It's pretty new. It goes beyond the old notion of nature versus nurture. Nature being that we are the way we are. It says that we are the way we are from when we were born. That it's all based on our genes. And nurture says we are the way we are because of our life experiences and how we were raised. But epigenetics says that these work together. We don't need to pit them against each other. They actually work together, and they play an important role in forming a full existence. And it says that DNA, it's not the determining element in a person's quality and quantity of life, but something that can be tinkered with and bent to our will. That our thoughts, the thoughts we have, they affect our genes. Not the other way around. So the mind controls the body. So the mind is connected to the body.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what epigenetics talks about.
Yeah. And see, that is so contrary to what many of us grew up, you know, learning that DNA does it. You know, you got the DNA and that's it. DNA is your DNA. Your DNA forever, and you know, period. You know, you know, the idea that you know, thoughts can affect DNA is like, whoa, wait a minute. You know, and again, it kind of goes back to the idea of personal responsibility, taking responsibility for your thoughts, and right now, you know, I think some people don't recognize the importance of thoughts. I mean, it's just like a passing thought. You know, it's like, okay, it just, you know, it just passed me by. It doesn't have any effect on anything. It's just, you know, one of those mind things, you know. But when in effect, it could really be affecting your DNA.
Yeah, exactly. And
amazing.
Yeah, our thoughts are so powerful.
They are very much so. Well, we're going to take the real quick break here, Teresa, and then when we come back, we'll move into the discussion of how these scientific discoveries or realizations fit into the picture of longevity. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, great. Everyone, stay tuned. We'll be right back in about 90 seconds.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,200 shows we have had over the past 7 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide, books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store. Our show is available as a free podcast on iTunes, and you can subscribe for free at the iTunes Store, or even quicker, there is a link on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc. And we also have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today my very special guest is Teresa Mishler, and we are talking about the book Buddha and Einstein Walk into a Bar, that was written by her husband, Guy Joseph Ale. Again, you can find out more about what is offered from them, from Teresa, at the website, www.lifespanseminar.com. And I do have a direct link to that website in the show page description. So we're back, Teresa?
I'm here.
Okay, great. Okay, now before we jump into how they affect lifespan, Bob from the Whit Sunday Islands decided to call in, and I think he has a question or comment. So good morning, Bob. It's what, 6 a.m. there for you over there in Australia? Off Australia?
It's 6:37 in the morning.
Yes.
It's a beautiful, still morning.
Well, I appreciate you joining us.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I love to catch every sunrise, you know, to witness each dawn. I'm just loving the show. Things that have been triggered by what you've shared so far is I'll just touch on personal responsibility. For me, when I became a ship's captain, I suddenly realized that, oh, bugger, the buck stops here, Bob. You know, I'm the ship's captain, I'm totally responsible for everything that happens. So I just took that ideology and applied it to my whole life. So I am master and commander of my life, and I take full responsibility for everything that I create in my life. So, and as master and commander, you don't need to respond till I've finished. So just hang fire for a minute, because it interrupts my flow. And because there's a time delay of about 3 or 4 seconds here, Robert. So I won't take too long, but as master and commander of my life, I thought, well, what's my life purpose? Well, I'm master, I'll set it. So I set my life purpose to simply find my own truth. And then as a spiritual being having a human experience, how do I want to experience this life? Well, I set my own conscious life intention, which is I am here to have a gentle, joyful, loving, and abundant life. And that's how my life is unfolding. That I am here to have is my direct command to the universe, but it's also my address to the universe, so it knows where to deliver what I've told it to do. And you know that the universe is doing a damn good job. I've got it to do all the hard work for me. And many years ago, somebody said, and you could probably tell me who it was, somebody famous said, "I think, therefore I am." Well, I've been pondering that one, and I reckon they got it wrong, because I experience my life through my senses. I feel my life, I don't think it. So I think that needs to be rewritten to be, "I feel, therefore I am." Because when I was going through 20 years of the pain of depression, it was not my mind that got me through it. It was my heart and jumping into my feelings. My feelings got me through what is essentially just a rite of passage. So now my mind is just a tool that I use when I choose. I treat it like my little puppy dog, being a good master. When it gets feisty, I give it something to do. You know, I say, "Go off and do some research on this topic and come back and report to me." So if it goes wagging its little tail, it's had some attention from the master. It comes back, reports to me, I pat it on the head and give it a treat. Okay, mind, back in your basket. My mind is, I'm so much more than my mind. But all I'm sharing is what works for me. And because for me, all are equal, all are unique, and all are sovereign, that's all I can do. Everybody has to find their own answers anyway, don't they? So thanks for letting me share. I could talk for hours.
Sure, Bob.
This, Rob.
Bob, this is great, and thanks for calling in. Because one of the parts of the book, Teresa, from Buddha and Einstein Walking to a Bar, is the part three, the mastering the mind and body, you know, and which is,
yes,
you know, a lot of what Bob was talking about, mastering, you know, the mind,
yes,
in his particular aspect. So
absolutely.
I want to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to talk about that
sure.
In a couple minutes, but I want to finish up the part about the scientific discoveries or realizations or theories and how they apply to the idea of longevity of us, you know, that inherent, I believe Guy indicated that we have that inherent latent ability to recognize or to tune in to what our longevity or time here is about.
Yes. When you look at these scientific foundations and you ask yourself, what does this have to do with understanding how long we can live? I mean, these sound great, but how are they connected? The way they're connected is with super strength theory. As we mentioned, personal responsibility, our reality happens by choices we make in our daily lives. We can step back and through the exercises that are talked about in the book that help us understand how long we can live, we can step back and once we understand that number or how long we can live, then we have the choice to do what we want with our life. And we create our reality, and we decide whether or not we want to live our potential duration by practicing good habits, body consciousness techniques, and self-management skills, and just living your best life. And that's how you can take that and make it into a practical application. With neuroplasticity, and just like we can change our brain, and we can acquire different skills, we can adapt through experience. Once we understand our potential duration of existence, we can adapt that to our life and then change our habits accordingly. And with epigenetics,
mm-hmm.
Epigenetics talks about DNA. And Guy mentions that it is in our DNA to sense how long we can live. It's already in there. It's a latent capacity. So once we tap into our DNA and we understand that we can really tinker our DNA and change it according to our thoughts, if in our mind we realize, okay, I can live till 92, for example, then that's already in our thoughts, and that affects our genes, and our mind and body are connected, so our body acts accordingly. Then, of course, our mind can affect our body through our attitudes. We have a good attitude and we're happy, then we're more healthy. But then we can't just say, okay, I'm going to live till I'm 92, I'm happy. We have to do something about it, which then we turn around and we follow the body consciousness techniques and self-management skills. And
yeah.
Which...
Yeah, those... yeah, go ahead.
Just give us a framework for our life.
Yeah, very much. Now, and that kind of moves us into that part three of the book, the Mastering the Mind and Body. One of the things that... in chapter 9 that I enjoyed was the body consciousness techniques. I think that we sometimes too often take for granted our body. You know, I mean, we really don't think about it. I mean, it's there, it's working for the most part, you know,
know,
it's usually only when there's a little bit of a, you know, tinkering or, you know, something's not quite working right that we suddenly become conscious of it. But it seems that, you know, at least in chapter 9, it talks about you not really getting to the point, waiting to get to the point of having something go wrong. It's really to have a continual awareness of the body, no?
Yes, exactly. And in a way, it's preventive maintenance for the body, if you think of it that way. And body consciousness techniques, they enhance our life. They help us deal with stress. They give us a higher quality of life if we follow them. But then they also help us tap into understanding how long we can live.
Yeah.
And I'll just go over.
Please,
go ahead.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No,
I'll just go over.
I was gonna. Go ahead and go over those techniques.
Yes, this meditation, pressure points, touch triggers, and ring muscles. And they're talked about a lot more in the book, but those are the four body consciousness techniques.
Yeah, very much. And then not only that, then you know, from there you kind of go on to self-management skills. Here's where we... You know, when it comes time to taking action, you know, to mastering that mind and body, it's in that self-management skills area that we really have an opportunity to put in effect, the skills needed. You know, I mean, it's something that, I mean, because it deals with like breathing, good nutrition, proper rest. You know, those are the things that we have control over. So, I mean, it seems like that it's particularly in that self-management area, you and Guy highlight the ability to take control and really choose, you know, a better management of the body.
Yes, exactly. One of the things that Guy really emphasizes is that body consciousness techniques, they help us understand how long we can live and help us have a higher quality of life, as I mentioned, but they're only the first part of the equation. The second part is the self-management skills. That helps the self-management skills, that helps us get to our potential duration of existence, or get to the age that we have the potential to live by practicing these practical applications of breathing, rest, you know, active lifestyle, and good nutrition, as you mentioned. And they're very important because these are the ingredients to having a better quality of life. And it also touches on personal responsibility.
Yeah.
We follow good habits.
Yeah, yeah. And in the book, you talk about changing bad habits to good ones, which, you know, it's one of those things, you know, that habits form over, you know, such a long period of time that, you know, it really takes conscious effort to change a habit, you know, and you know, if it's been a habit for a long time, it's going to take a long time to change it, correct?
Yes, exactly. But Guy really emphasizes, you know, how important it is, your attitude and your thoughts into going into these habits. If you have a bad habit, he says that it takes a little while to turn into a good one. But if we, in a way, if we think we can, and if we're determined, we really can change our bad habits. And I really like what the listener Bob said, I feel, therefore I am, because it also has to do with your feelings.
Yeah.
It's not just
very,
our thoughts,
but
our feelings as well.
Yeah. Our emotions and feelings really, to me, you know, it's one of those areas that, you know, if we are going to take action, we have to feel, there has to be, the feeling has to be there to drive or motivate, you know, someone to take action, you know, and if you don't have the feeling, you're just not going to do it, you know, and, you know, and that, to me, that's real key. And that's where it seems that, you know, when it comes time to creating, you know, the reality you want to experience, just thinking about it isn't going to change, you know, change it. It's not going to be the motivation. It's that response. It's the feeling and then the taking action that's really going to lead one to experience the change.
Exactly. You can't just think about it. I agree with that. You have to put one foot in front of the other and take action and start making the change.
Yeah. And the part four of the book, Buddha and Einstein Walk Into a Bar, is the everyday applications. And I mentioned to you before going on air, that was one of my favorite sections because for me, you know, knowledge without application, it doesn't do a whole lot for me. I mean, it doesn't, I don't see any changes when it comes to, I learned that, oh my goodness, you know. It was kind of like a friend of mine said, you know, I've been doing mental push-ups for years and I still don't see it in my body, you know. And it's like, you know, it's like, yeah, that ain't going to work. But the application, you know, is key. And you, in the book, there's in chapter 11, the mental imagery tools, there are a lot of different tools in there. And I, you know, I'm confident that a reader will find one, two, three, you know, of them that they resonate with. And that's one of the things I like about it, is because, you know, it offers a variety of tools that, you know, people can choose from. I mean, because not everybody, you know, resonates with a particular process, you know. So that's really important. And so now when Guy went to put this particular part together, what I mean, was did he put in there practices that he used?
Yes. Yes, he did. He practiced what he preached, per se. And all the exercises that he lists, he did at one time or another. And so these are systems that he came up with or we came up with together. And he practiced it in real time and then passed it on to the reader. And
great.
I personally can say that I saw how some of these exercises really enhanced his life.
Well, good. You know, that's so important. Well, we're down to the last 5 minutes here, Teresa. So before we go, I did want to just mention a little bit, or have you maybe give us an indication of what listeners can find at your website, lifespanseminar.com.
Yes, and they can find, first of all, at the very top of the page, we have a free newsletter for them called 7 Secrets to Living Your Longest and Healthiest Life. All they have to do is click on it, put their name and email address, and they'll be sent that information for free. And we offer workshops, seminars, as well as individual sessions on stress management techniques, healthy living, yoga, and meditation classes. And to purchase the book, Buddha and Einstein Walk Into a Bar, you can go to lifespanseminar.com/store. And on the top of the page,
You'll
see the link to purchase the book.
Great. Well, I really want to thank you for your time today, Teresa. I've really enjoyed speaking with you. It's been a lot of fun. And again, I enjoyed reading Buddha and Einstein Walk Into a Bar and learning about Guy and all of the things that he shared. I mean, it's one of those books that people will be able to put into practice what's in the book and be able to enjoy a happier and more peaceful life. So that's great. And it's wonderful that you are getting this information out there for him so that his legacy lives on and what he believed in lives on.
Thank you. And it was good to be with you, Robert. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Teresa Mishler, and we've been talking about the book her husband Guy Joseph L. wrote called Buddha and Einstein Walk Into a Bar, How New Discoveries About Mind, Body, and Energy Can Help Increase Your Longevity. And again, as we mentioned, you can find out more at the website, lifespanseminar.com. And again, I do have a direct link to that website in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me, that's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.